will get to the heart of this situation, and they will come from the people. They will come from those who have been out in the streets, who have been out engaging in protests.
We want to thank you, David Bowen, for joining us, Democratic State Representative in Wisconsin. In the coming days, we hope to be speaking with Jacob Blake's father, Jacob Blake Sr. A happy belated birthday to Dennis McCormick, Democracy Now! Produced with Renee Feltz, Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Libby Rainey, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Tarsena, Carla Wills, Tammy Warrenoff, Tarina Nadura, Sam Alkoff, Tamari Astudio, John Hamilton, Robbie Karen, Hani Massoud, Adriano Contreras, our General Manager, Julie Crosby. Special thanks to Becca Staley, Marion Barnard, Dennis Moynihan. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks so much.
You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming online at kboo.fm.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available on our website at kboo.fm. Due to the temporary closures of in-station activity at KBOO, meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available on our website. The Program Advisory Committee meets on the second Tuesday of the month at 6 p.m. Please visit our website at kboo.fm to verify if a meeting is being held.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, pro-Trump extremists in Washington, D.C. have broken into the Capitol building in an attempted coup. Similar violence from the far right today taking place in Salem, Oregon, as well as Olympia, Washington. And Democratic victories in the state of Georgia as Raphael Warnock and John Ossoff win their respective Senate runoffs. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, January 6th, 2021. I'm Althea Billings. Right-wing insurrectionists are attacking the Capitol today in Washington, D.C. in an attempted coup. They have been baited and encouraged by the President of the United States, Donald Trump. A coup d'etat is defined as a sudden attempt by a small group of people to take over the government by force. Tens of thousands of pro-Trump extremists gathered in Washington today as Congress began its ceremonial count of the presidential electoral votes. After a speech from Trump this morning, insurrectionists overran security at the Capitol building. Capitol Police seemed completely unprepared for the act of sedition, despite weeks of warning from insurrectionists themselves. As Capitol Police were being overwhelmed and the extremists entered the House and Senate floors, they ran rampant without a strong law enforcement response. Munitions like tear gas and pepper spray were not used by police, but rather used by the mob on police in order to gain entry into the building. The soft police response is in part due to the president himself. Since Washington, D.C. is not a state, the D.C. Guard itself is not under the purview of the mayor, but rather the president. Members of Congress, aides, and press were taken to safe locations by Capitol Police. A woman was shot on the steps of the House of Representatives. She was seen taken from the scene on a stretcher covered in blood. The hospital she was taken to has confirmed her death. The circumstances of her death are unknown. 13 arrests have been made so far. Here's what D.C. Police Chief Robert Conti told reporters earlier today.
The only riotous behavior that we have encountered is at the Capitol, inside of the Capitol. Obviously, when the demonstrators turned rioters, entered the Capitol, crossed the police line, they've assaulted a number of police officers with all kinds of projectiles, etc. That's when the Metropolitan Police Department later on was called to assist. With respect to the outside jurisdictions, the outside jurisdiction role, they will be under my command, under my authority, and they will be deployed to assist us with the clearing operation. We were looking just above 13 arrests. I should add a very important note here that none of the arrests that occurred were of D.C. residents. All of the individuals who were arrested were from out of the area. A number of firearms have been recovered by the Metropolitan Police Department's Gun Recovery Unit, to include long guns have been recovered, as well as handguns.
That was D.C. Police Chief Robert Conti. Colorado Republican Congressman Ken Buck was on the floor when the insurrectionists breached the Capitol. Here's what he told reporters.
I am safe. My staff is safe. We are hunkered down with another office, and we are safe, anxious, and happy that we can see the TV and see what's going on in the Capitol. Yeah, I was on the House floor. I was one of the people set to speak, and so I was sitting on the House floor. The first thing I saw was the Capitol Police, plainclothes Capitol Police, escorted the speaker from the chair. We continued with the proceedings for a few minutes. Capitol Police then announced, came on the House floor and announced that the doors had been locked in the chamber and everybody should stay in place. About 10 minutes later, we were told to put on our gas masks, and a few minutes after that, the windows of the doors around the house were being shattered. And it was hard to tell whether it was gunfire at first or whether it was just a glass breaking, and it appears now that it was just glass breaking. And the a bunch of us got heavy furniture and started barricading the doors to help the Capitol Police. Soon after that, probably about 15 minutes, we were told that they anticipated that the House chambers would be breached and asked us to evacuate. And so we evacuated through the smoke.
That was Colorado Congressman Ken Buck speaking to reporters. Meanwhile, neo-Nazi accelerationists are celebrating the moment as the start of the, quote, Second Civil War. These online accelerationists believe that acts of terror like the one committed today at the Capitol will lead to the collapse of Western government. This is the first time the U.S. Capitol has been breached since the 1800s, when the British attacked and burned the building during the War of 1812. These extremists have attacked press outside the building, and the mob has explicitly threatened more violence this evening. Congresspeople terrorized from their place of work implored the president to tell the mob to stand down. President-elect Joe Biden spoke live and pressed Trump to take action.
At this hour, our democracy is under an unprecedented assault, unlike anything we've seen in modern times. An assault and the citadel of liberty, the Capitol itself. An assault on the people's representatives, on the Capitol Hill police, sworn to protect them, and the public servants who work at the heart of our republic. An assault on the rule of law like few times we've ever seen it. An assault on the most sacred of American undertakings, the doing of the people's business. Let me be very clear. The scenes of chaos at the Capitol do not reflect a true America, do not represent who we are. What we're seeing are a small number of extremists dedicated to lawlessness. This is not dissent. It's disorder. It's chaos. It borders on sedition. And it must end now. I call on this mob to pull back and allow the work of democracy to go forward. You've heard me say before in different contexts, The words of a president matter, no matter how good or bad that president is. At their best, the words of a president can inspire. At their worst, they can incite. And therefore, I call on President Trump to go on national television now to fulfill his oath and defend the Constitution and demand an end to this siege, to storm the Capitol, to smash windows, to occupy offices, the floor of the United States Senate, rummaging through desks, on the Capitol, on the House of Representatives, threatening the safety of duly elected officials. It's not protest, it's insurrection. The world's watching, like so many other Americans. I am genuinely shocked and saddened that our nation, so long the beacon of light and hope for democracy, has come to such a dark moment.
That was President-elect Joe Biden imploring Trump to tell the mob he inspired to end their siege. Trump put out a pre-recorded video on Twitter, which gently encouraged his supporters to leave the Capitol, but also notably pushed the false narrative that the election was stolen. He also told the mob that they were, quote, very special, and we love you. Since then, progress has been made by police, National Guards people, SWAT officers, and the FBI to clear the building and the property. An improvised explosive device was found on the Capitol grounds, as was one at the Republican National Committee headquarters. The RNC and the Democratic National Committee in D.C. were evacuated today as a result. Congressional leaders remain determined to finish counting the votes tonight, saying that it's important it be televised and that they don't back down. Congress also plans to try to persuade objectors like Ted Cruz and Josh Hawley to change their votes. Minnesota Representative Ilhan Omar tweeted today that she would draw up articles of impeachment against Trump for inciting a coup attempt. New Missouri Representative and former Ferguson activist Cori Bush announced she plans to introduce a resolution to expel the members of Congress who pushed the narrative of a fraudulent election and plan to vote against certification today. What happens further into the evening remains to be seen, though insurrectionists have threatened violence against journalists on the scene. D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser put the city under curfew from 6 p.m. Eastern Time to 6 a.m. tomorrow morning. Pro-Trump extremists gathered Wednesday morning at the state capitol in Salem, denouncing the presidential election as well as Governor Kate Brown's COVID-19 restrictions. As a precautionary measure, all federal and state offices in Salem remained closed on Wednesday as officials braced for potentially volatile crowds. Hundreds of demonstrators stood in the rain today as a projector broadcast the congressional vote to certify the Electoral College votes from the November presidential election. Those gathered listened, prayed, and marched around the state capitol buildings, repeating unfounded allegations of voter fraud, mirroring the same defiance that Trump himself has put forth, resisting his succession. Anna Dreen of Portland, a member of Oregon Women for Trump, told the press, quote, "We stand with our patriot brothers and sisters that are standing in D.C., also demanding federal investigations to assure Americans their votes can be trusted." Fearing escalation like that in Washington, D.C., Oregon legislature officials sent an email to Capitol staff on Tuesday foretelling the closure of operations at the Capitol for Wednesday. Earlier demonstrations were also cited in the decision to keep Capitol offices closed, particularly a gathering that assembled on December 21st and that ended up interrupting Governor Brown's special session to address the pandemic's economic tolls on the state. Brown also came under attack at Wednesday's Salem gatherings, with members of far-right groups burning an effigy of Brown, shouting their disdain regarding the governor's coronavirus policies. Mike Davis of Beaver called Wednesday's rally a, quote, "fight for our freedoms and our rights as American citizens. We are here to save our president and to save our country." And in Olympia, Washington today, pro-Trump extremists have broken into the governor's mansion. Officials say Jay Inslee and his family are at a safe location, though they've declined to be more specific due to safety concerns. Democrats win in the Georgia Senate runoff elections and make history. Reverend Raphael Warnock has defeated Senator Kelly Loeffler, and John Ossoff won against Senator David Perdue in Georgia's runoff elections yesterday. Warnock is the lead pastor of the Ebenezer Baptist Church in Atlanta, Dr. Martin Luther King's former congregation. He will be the first black senator from Georgia. Ossoff will be the first Jewish senator from that state, and at 33, the youngest member of the Senate. With two new Democratic senators from Georgia, the U.S. Senate will be split 50-50 between the two parties. Vice President Kamala Harris also acts as president of the Senate, meaning she casts the tie-breaking vote. This means Democrats will control both houses of Congress for the first time in a decade. Unified control will make it much easier for the Biden administration to get its legislative agenda passed. It also opens the door for less pushback to political appointees and judicial nominations. You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for an in-depth analysis of the attempted coup at the Capitol with Coco Doss, a member of the National Editorial Board of RefuseFascism.org. At 5:45, it's news from the Boo, your look at the news inside KBOO. Then at 7, it's Hard Knock Radio. Tonight's weather has a chance of showers with a low of 44 degrees. Tomorrow's weather will be mostly cloudy with a high of 51. Today in history, in 2003, Mamie Till died. She was the mother of Emmett Till, who was murdered after allegedly offending a white cashier at a grocery store. She insisted at her son's funeral that the casket be kept open and is largely credited with helping spur the greater civil rights movement. The quote of the day is from Mamie Till, who said, quote, "I want the world to see what they did to my baby." Protests in Kenosha, Wisconsin continued last night after prosecutors announced that Officer Rustin Shesky, who shot Jacob Blake 7 times in the back from close range last summer, will not face charges. Blake was not killed but is paralyzed from the waist down. Shesky has said he acted in self-defense as he feared Blake would turn around and stab him with a knife he was carrying. Protesters met in Kenosha last night, where a caravan of 30 cars and about 50 pedestrians marched through residential areas shouting, quote, "Wake up, Kenosha." Law enforcement kept its distance yesterday, and as one protester said, quote, "What law enforcement fails to realize is that unrest isn't caused unless you try and breach our rights to gather and protest." Last night, the Marquette men's basketball team in nearby Milwaukee took a knee before its game and wore black uniforms. The team also released a statement that the team was, quote, "extremely disappointed" that Shesky was not charged. On Monday, 18-year-old Kyle Rittenhouse, who had traveled to Kenosha from Illinois, pled not guilty to the murder of 2 men during protests against Blake's shooting in August. The Menominee tribe is claiming legal victory after a law judge denied a wetlands permit due to possible environmental impacts. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News, the daily newscast dedicated to Indigenous news, issues, and culture.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Menominee Indian Tribe of Wisconsin is claiming a legal victory after a Michigan administrative law judge denied a wetlands permit for the Back 40 mine due to a lack of information on environmental impacts. The tribe challenged the permit to protect the Menominee River wetlands and to protect cultural and historic resources. Tribal officials say the proposed open-pit gold and zinc mine threatens water, the environment, and would have a negative impact on sacred sites. In a statement, Menominee Chairwoman Joan Delabrue said it's a win for the river, people, and tribe. She added they will not stop fighting until the waters, lands, and sacred sites are protected for good. The company behind the project, Aquila Resources, in a statement disapproved of the decision and is evaluating next steps. Supporters of the mine are seeking jobs and an economic boost. Native Vote advocates helped rally Native voters in Georgia. The group Four Directions, the state-recognized Lower Muscogee Creek Tribe, and the grassroots group Civic Georgia worked together to get out the Native vote. They encouraged people to vote Tuesday in Georgia's runoff election. The groups hosted a virtual powwow leading up to Election Day. Lower Muscogee Creek Principal Chief Marion McCormick says people tend to overlook Native people in the state.
Here in Georgia, they tend to think Native Americans were all removed. And that is that none of us are here. I have been Principal Chief of the Lower Muscogee Creek Tribe for over 27 years. We're among nearly 150,000 Native Americans who live in Georgia today. We are a strong people, and as our ancestors have done for generations, we will move on and we will survive and we will honor those that have gone on before us.
McCormick says her people have been hit hard by COVID-19, adding they need to engage politically to have their needs met and voices heard. Kevin Sinha with Civic Georgia says the collaboration is part of community building.
Building community with all of you is the core of civic engagement, so that we can connect, we learn, we discuss issues, we have opportunities to heal and work together to make progress.
The Georgia runoff election was for two U.S. Senate seats and Public Service Commission. According to Four Directions, there are more than 100,000 eligible Native American voters in the state. A lawsuit over Neiman Marcus selling a coat that bears a striking resemblance to a copyrighted Alaska Native Raven Tells pattern is close to a settlement. From KTOO in Juneau, Jeremy Shea reports.
The cultural nonprofit Sea Alaska Heritage Institute and the heirs of the late weaver Clarissa Rizal sued the luxury retailer in April. They said Neiman Marcus violated the Indian Arts and Crafts Act by misrepresenting the coat as an Alaska Native craft. In a joint filing in federal court, both sides say they've agreed to the key terms of a settlement and are just working on details. They think they'll have it worked out by January 29th. Institute President Rosita Worrell responded to a request for comment by email. She didn't share any particulars of the settlement, but said the Institute was grateful for the attention the lawsuit had received. Quote, "The widespread interest in this story indicates to us that the public is as concerned as we are about protecting our cultural heritage." Attorneys representing Neiman Marcus and a luxury brand based in Germany that's also a defendant could not be reached for comment. For unrelated reasons, Neiman Marcus declared bankruptcy in May, then worked its way out in September. In Juneau, I'm Jeremy Shea.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Former Portland Mayor Sam Adams may be returning to City Hall, but this time as a staffer for current Mayor Ted Wheeler. Though no formal offer has been made, Wheeler and Adams have been in conversation about a possible role for Adams in the mayor's office as Wheeler begins his second term. According to inside sources, the pair has yet to determine what specific role Adams may serve, but both Wheeler and some of his current staff see an advantage to bringing in the seasoned predecessor to the administration. The return of a former mayor to work under a successor would be a first for Portland City government if Adams ends up joining the ranks. Adams came to prominence originally serving on the administration of former Mayor Vera Katz before he served as mayor himself from 2009 to 2012. Adams' tenure as mayor was marred by a sex scandal, and while no charges were brought against him, it did keep him from re-election. More recently, Adams attempted to unseat Commissioner Chloe Udaly in last May's primary, but finished third behind her and political newcomer Mingus Mapps, who eventually defeated Udaly in November. Though his interest to return to Portland City Hall seems evident, neither Adams nor Wheeler have made public comment on the looming possibility. Willamette Week reported on Tuesday that Wheeler's current chief of staff, Kristen Dennis, is leaving the mayor's office next month to become chief of staff to Metro Council President Lynn Peterson. It is unclear if Dennis's departure will mean Wheeler intends to replace her with Adams as the mayor's office prepares itself to launch into the new term. 218 prisoners at Larch Correction Center in Yakult, northeast of Vancouver, have tested positive for COVID-19. Last Thursday, officials announced that 6 prisoners had tested positive. State officials said all prisoners who tested positive are being housed together to reduce spread of the virus, which is standard procedure. The prison has a capacity of 480, but no announcement has been made as to how many are currently incarcerated there or whether any staff members have tested positive. Conservation and environmental groups are slamming the federal government's recent attack on migratory bird protections. Suzanne Potter with the Public News Service has more on the story.
Conservation groups are expressing outrage over the Trump administration's rollback of the Migratory Bird Protection Act, or MBTA. With the change announced on Tuesday, companies could no longer be held accountable for killing birds in the course of business as long as their actions don't specifically target birds. Mike Leahy with the National Wildlife Federation sees it as another example of President Donald Trump weakening environmental protections.
This rule is basically the administration flipping the birds and saying it doesn't matter what Congress or the courts say, we can interpret laws however we want.
The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service claims it's clarifying the rule to provide regulatory certainty and cut down on lawsuits. In the past, the MBTA has been used to make companies like BP pay to clean up the massive oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico. It was also intended to deter bird deaths from power lines or poison from the use of banned pesticides. Leahy points to a study published in Science magazine that estimates the United States has lost 3 billion birds since 1970. That's 1 in 4 birds.
Oil waste pits kill somewhere between 500,000 and 1 million birds a year. Power lines can kill nearly 70 million birds per year. Communication towers, around 7 million birds per year.
Unless the courts do it first, the Biden administration is expected to reverse this decision, but it might not be a simple process. Conservation groups would like to see a new permitting program that encourages companies' best practices to avoid bird deaths. For Public News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
With all of the controversy stirred up by President Trump, experts converge to clarify Vice President Pence's role in the certification today. Diane Bernard has more on the story.
Pro-Trump protesters have converged on Capitol Hill today as Congress gets set to certify states' electoral votes. The mostly ceremonial process will take longer than in past years as some lawmakers challenge the results. President Donald Trump has encouraged the demonstrations, claiming election fraud, and he tweeted on Monday that Vice President Mike Pence has the power to reject some states' electors. Rebecca Green, professor at William & Mary Law School, notes under the Electoral Count Act, the vice president has no authority to decide the election outcome. His duties as Senate president are to maintain order, break any potential tie, and announce the winners.
None of these duties include the power to decide controversies that might arise over counting electoral votes or to otherwise decide the outcome of the election. So that's just not how the law works.
Some lawmakers are planning to voice objections during the vote tally, which could take up to 2 hours per objection. This could delay the final announcement of Joe Biden as the winner, but federal law requires it to occur before Inauguration Day. Green spoke at an online event about the procedure of today's joint session and the implications of challenging the results. Another expert, Meredith McGehee, with the nonpartisan group Issue One, said it's dangerous for lawmakers to call the election process rigged or untrustworthy because it undermines the entire democratic system.
This domestic kind of erosion that's happening by our own president, there's nothing much more it could do that make our foreign adversaries happier. This has been work that not only Russia or China have undertaken, but other foreign adversaries. This is kind of the lit match that we're playing with at this point.
Meanwhile, officials are bracing for possible violence in the nation's capital as groups from across the country gather for a final show of support for the outgoing president's attempts to overthrow the election results. For Public News Service, I'm Diane Bernard.
KBOO News poet Dan Raphael sees big changes just ahead.
Call it power, privilege, or status quo. They don't want to let go, admit inequity, or permit change. Once you're a winner, you cannot lose. If the results aren't what you want, the other side is cheating. As Trump and the Repubs have shown us, when you're in charge, who's going to make you follow the rules? Defunding the police puts the powerful in jeopardy of being less special. The powerful don't break laws. They ignore, stall, subvert, and fortify, thinking the only way to not have less is get more. Thinking if you say something loud and often enough, it will become true. We don't get change by asking politely. When voting is our only political action, we don't have much power or money, but we have so much else: numbers, strength, creativity, and compassion. One down, one to go in Georgia today, one big hurdle in Washington today. The starting line of a new winnable race is in sight. For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, January 6th, 2021. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. call or text us with your breaking news, stories, and tips at 971-245-2158. Our remote production team for tonight's newscast includes Dan Raphael, Jenka Soderberg, and Jeffrey Wade. The producer is Nat Moon, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Diane Bernard, Antonia Gonzalez, and Suzanne Potter. The director of evening news is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Althea Billings. Stay tuned now for KBOO News In Depth. We're going into an analysis of the attempted coup at the Capitol with Coco Doss, a member of the National Editorial Board of RefuseFascism.org.
KBOO News In Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
Today's coup attempt against the Capitol in Washington, D.C. brings into stark focus how fascism has crept through the far right over the last 4 years. KBOO's Nat Moon spoke with Coco Doss, a member of the National Editorial Board of Refuse Fascism, about how the right has telegraphed their intentions, been constantly stoked by the president, and the danger of letting fascists go unopposed.
So Refuse Fascism has been organizing since actually the end of 2016, since after the 2016 election, stating, you know, analyzing that the Trump-Pence regime was a fascist regime, that that this election was a leap in a particular fascist movement, and that it was our responsibility as people living in this country, you know, for the sake of humanity, to stay in the streets, to protest nonviolently, you know, in a sustained way, not just, you know, a one-time protest, but to stay in the streets day after day or month after month, however it could have been sustained, to actually demand that the Trump-Pence regime be removed from power because they posed a great danger to the whole world. We're a movement of people from people of many different political perspectives united under this recognition that the Trump-Pence regime was a danger and needed to go. Obviously, we did not succeed in launching that kind of sustained protest, but I think you're seeing in what happened today that what we've been saying about the fascism of this regime and of Trump in particular is really has been borne out. We've been organizing people into protest for 4 years, and we've been out in the streets pretty much nonstop.
You brought up today, so despite the far right telegraphing their plans for today, the country seems completely overwhelmed by what's happening and surprised. What are your thoughts about what's going on at the Capitol right now?
Mm-hmm. You know, this is unprecedented. It's an unprecedented attempted fascist coup of fascist stormtroopers actually descending on the Capitol and police retreating and letting them actually bring this, what should be a routine formality, bring it to a halt. But, you know, in some ways, Trump has been, you're absolutely right, the far right has been telegraphing this, but Trump has also been promising this for months, since before the election, and constantly talking about his tough people. He called these people into D.C. today for this specific reason, to disrupt this process. And it's an extreme danger. It can be called nothing less than an attempted fascist coup. And, you know, whether or not it succeeds, the damage it has done is unprecedented. And extremely alarming. And, you know, part of why people are surprised is because they have not been paying attention. We have been calling out this fascist coup since before the election. And, you know, we really do call on people now to take a stand, to stop saying that this can't happen, that it's not likely to succeed, therefore we don't need to do anything about it. We actually need to stand up and stop it. The first few days after an attempted fascist coup or an attempted coup of any kind, what the people do matters greatly.
What do you think this act of sedition, this fascist coup, could change? What are the possibilities for the days to come?
Well, one, they've already succeeded in delaying the vote. They've already, in the vote, the ratification, they've already succeeded in delaying that. I don't know if these debates are going to continue, or if these challenges in the face of what happened today, if these representatives and senators still continue their challenges, it really tells you where they stand on democracy and where they stand on, you know, elections. But, you know, what it sets up for what is possible anytime they lose an election or anytime. I mean, this is actually a continuation of things that have been happening at the state level of armed stormtroopers, thugs, actually, you know, storming these state capitals and putting people under lockdown, threatening them, you know, so that they have to wear bulletproof vests. And, you know, even, you know, there was even a kidnapping plot against the governor of Michigan. It just escalates everything. It escalates what can be done through terror and violence, which is exactly the message that Trump has been sending since the campaign trail. You know, he said he longed for the days when protesters were taken out on stretchers. This is what fascism is. It's a blatant form of dictatorship through the rule of terror and violence, which is enforced not only by fascists in government, but also these, you know, fascists in the streets. And anybody who does not want to live under that kind of white supremacist mob rule, you know, we can't just say if we ignore it, it's going to go away. It's not going to go away. It's actually going to keep escalating. It was allowed, it was given air to breathe. It was given air to spread and get this far because people ignored it. I mean, people actively said, just, you know, let them have their day and it'll go away. Well, it's not going to go away. And if we don't actually take a stand society-wide throughout the country and say no more, it will continue. And it can continue to a point where at one day it could succeed, you know, for whatever goal they have under Trump or not, where a fascist takeover of society and government can succeed if we don't put a stop to it now.
Absolutely. And it's been fascinating to see the police response today. We saw police taking selfies with insurrectionists. We saw the reticent National Guard unwilling to come in. Can you talk a little about the police response today or with, you know, the Klan, with fascists in general, compared mm-hmm. to BLM protests, for example, this summer?
Yeah, people are rightly pointing out the difference in how BLM protesters are treated just for, you know, even for just gathering peacefully. It takes very little for the tear gas to start and the brutality to start, as opposed to hours and hours of these fascists gathering, actually days of these fascists gathering, and, you know, even starting skirmishes with the police. And then they get to the Capitol and the police stand aside. This has happened over and over again, and I think we cannot overlook how much this ideology, this fascist white supremacist ideology, has actually has infiltrated into the police, has become a part of police unions and police ethos. a majority, you know, many police unions endorse Trump. And Trump, you know, has made his support of the police one of his rallying cries. And the Blue Lives Matter is often seen with the Confederate flag and the U.S. flag as part of these fascist rallies. You know, they've become very interconnected. I don't know, I can't say how much of that has gone into the police response today. I mean, there's also, like, you know, a white supremacy and racism that's entrenched in so many of the institutions of this country, and that has to do with it too. You know, for decades and centuries, actually, the treatment of black people and white people have been different at the hands of police, but the police as an institution, and in fact, actually, all of the institutions of government have been, the fascists have advanced through all of these institutions, including, you know, different parts of the government, including, you know, of course, ICE and Border Patrol and the police. And we should not forget, too, that, you know, Trump has openly encouraged more brutality from the police against these protesters and against Black Lives Matter, and against black people and brown people in general, calling Black Lives Matter protests riots, you know, anarchist criminal activity. And yet these protests that actually are violent, that actually are inciting, you know, insurrection, you know, is what he thinks is legitimate. They don't actually think any protest against them is legitimate, but they think anything that they do as a mob, as a group, is legitimate. And, you know, that's a very dangerous, it's a very dangerous situation.
How do you think the landscape is going to change politically now that Biden, a corporate Democrat, has been elected to the presidency? Do you see the landscape of fascism in America shifting, if you see it shifting at all?
You know, the biggest change will be that Trump's hands will be off the levers of power, and that is not a small thing. We in Refuse Fascism have always said that voting alone is not enough to stop this fascist movement. And these fascists are in the courts, they're in all the levels of government, and Biden, you know, his main line up to this point, we'll see if it changes, you know, tomorrow, has been to reconcile with these people, to, you know, reach across the aisle and find unity. But there can be no unity with these people who are standing for they're fighting for a future of unchallenged white supremacy, misogyny, America first chauvinism, you know, backed up by a lot of violence. So it has always been up to the people, the decent people in this country, who, you know, really do want a world where diversity is valued, where black lives do matter. It's up to us to actually bring this fascist movement and program to a halt with our actions of nonviolent, creative actions, you know, creating a culture of you know, awakened protest, just like we saw over the summer, but where we finally, you know, really unite and say, no, we're not going to accept a fascist America in any form. Biden is not a fascist. He's part of the ruling class. He's not a fascist, but he is not the answer to this fascist program and this fascist movement. And for any of us to stand back and rely on that and just say, look, our work is done, he's going to take care of it, that's a deadly delusion, and not one that we support at all. Some things will be immediately different. You know, we won't have a lunatic with his finger on the nuclear trigger. Yet many aspects of this fascist movement and program are going to remain intact if the people don't stand up.
The call for unity always makes me think of that James Baldwin quote that goes, we can disagree and still love each other unless your disagreement is rooted in my oppression and denial of my humanity and right to exist.
Right. Yeah, that's a really important quote. And there's been way too much normalizing and making excuses for, you know, even the regular Trump voter. You know, okay, maybe they are not all racist, but they all stood behind a racist president, and they all stood behind a racist program, and they all condoned it. We can't make peace with that. Making peace with that is a nightmare for humanity.
You mentioned a little bit ago that even, you know, way before this MAGA rally, before fascist events, people on Twitter, folks in the news, in politics say, you know, just stay out of the fascist way. They'll go home on their own, let it play out. Can you talk a little bit about why letting fascists run loose doesn't work?
You know, there's actually precedence in this, and we can learn actually from the history of how fascists came to power in Italy and Germany. And one of those ways was to dominate the streets, and through their you know, marches and street fights or whatever, you know, everything that they did in the streets actually helped them to rise to power. And what happened was eventually all the other forces in society that could have stopped it receded, and they said exactly the same things that people were saying to us when we were saying we need to, you know, have a presence and have some kind of counter protest against these million MAGA marches that took place in November and December. They said, you know, I'm just gonna stay at home, I'm not gonna engage with these people, I'm going to just hide in my home, and eventually they'll go away. And that's not what happens at all. The more that you concede and seed the streets, it's the seeding the public square and the public discourse to these people, the more air and space they get to spread their poison all over society. It gives them energy, it gives them power, and it emboldens